Chapter 138, Circling the Square. On Sunday morning, we go to visit Diana, whose address still faintly appears on the inside of Pedro's wrist, where she wrote it back in Chapter 132. The address leads us to a public housing estate at the bottom of Rushmore Road, where litter and leaves collect, eddy and swirl, briefly dance together before settling in the middle of a square. Something of a backwater it is, where the occasional tinkle of a can can be heard as it's tossed to the ground by someone sitting on a wall with his hat pushed back. Others are perched on the backs of benches with their feet on the seat where you would normally sit. They follow us with their eyes as we pass by, a whiff of cannabis in the air. Looking all around, there are blocks of residential housing on three sides, four stories high, and standing not far off, ghostly tower blocks rising up alarmingly, formidable and grey. At ground level in this square there is a cafe, ackee and saltfish being the special of the day, a modest supermarket, a laundromat, and a doctor's consultancy pinned behind security mesh. From a doorway on the other side of the square comes the sound of a pool ball smacking into the back of another of its kind. Poignant and concise reminder that the unseen can race up behind you at any time, slap you on the back, send you reeling in directions you might not have contemplated or even imagined. "Is good here," says Pedro, appreciative as ever. "Much life." We enter the block indicated on Pedro's inner wrist, admiring the prolific graffiti leading all the way to the lift, which serves as such but also as a mobile urinal, judging by the puddles and stench inside. Up on the third floor we knock at Diana's door, to which she eventually comes, opening first the ladder slot to check us out. The door unlocks and opens, and there she is, red hair tousled into an inspired cloud, in a paint-stained housecoat and unlaced boots, no socks. "Painting," she says. "Don't mind the mess." We wander in, not minding at all, right through to the front room overlooking the square and those tower blocks again. Three or four or five monoliths, perhaps left by aliens. They tower like giants bearing down on streets of old upstairs, downstairs, row houses. Between the towers, a glimpse of green marshland, dotted with the white specks of gulls. Diana's work in progress is propped up on an armchair and is this very same scene. The view from that window, but flattened out and skewed and hued in pink and grey and blue. "The clouds are like pillows," suggests Pedro, hand on chin, steadying himself to not miss any important details. "Tea?" says Diana. "Yes," we all agree. She clears away newsprint spread across the sofa, tossing a pallet to the floor. The pallet that you could frame and put on a wall, and it would be greatly admired. She gathers up empty beer cans and a collection of tea-stained mugs. I prefer not to distract myself with cleaning, she says. Such a waste of time. Attracted by shouts, we look down on the square to witness some kind of altercation going on down there. No milk, says Diana. There are three men just outside the shop, brandishing machetes or even swords, attempting to run inside, where the shopkeepers are taking cover, crouched behind the counter, shouting and launching cans of soup and canned fruit at the attackers. Wouldn't like to be on the end of one of those, says Diana, not clarifying if she is referring to the cans of food or the swords. All present nod in agreement, or perhaps bewilderment. Emocionante, says Pedro, and the fact is, he is right. A day can be packed full with all kinds of surprises. Outside one's comfort zone, taking a giant step outside your mind, on the edge of the city where stray dogs roam and life goes on, where the breeze waltzes playfully with litter and leaves, where the marsh lies and the canal winds, as ever, through better or worse times.